The whole time I was sick, I was hypervigilant over my conscience, careful to avoid anything resembling spiritual error. Dear God, how I yearned for good health so that I might serve you better. This desire itself became the cause of my undoing. I was so young when I became seriously paralyzed. As soon as I realized that earthly doctors were unable to cure me, I turned to heaven for healing. Because even though I carried my illness with joy, I still preferred to get better. I sometimes thought that if I were to recover my health only to go out and miss the mark all over again, it would be better to stay sick. But I still believed that I could be of greater service to my God if I were well. This is how we deceive ourselves. We do not surrender entirely to God's will, even though He is the one who knows what is best for us. I began to offer devotions during Mass. I stuck to prescribed prayers because I distrusted alternative expressions of worship. Women, especially, love to invent ceremonies. I could never stand these rituals. It has been confirmed to me since then that such practices are superstitious and inappropriate. I chose the glorious Saint Joseph as my master and advocate and entrusted myself to him completely. I found that this great father and lord of mine solved the problem of my health and also delivered me from bigger issues, like the loss of my soul and my honor. He freely gave me greater blessings than I could ever ask of him. Even now, I can't think of a single instance in which he has neglected to give me anything I have asked for. It is amazing to see all the mercy God has shown me and the perils, both physical and spiritual, from which He has rescued me through this blessed saint. The Lord seems to have given other saints the grace to fulfill certain needs, but in my experience, this glorious saint comes to our aid in all areas. When Christ walked this earth, Joseph was His guardian. As a boy, Jesus called him Father and obeyed His commands. It seems to me that Christ wants to know that in heaven He still does everything Joseph asks. Other people I have advised have experienced a similar response when they commended themselves to the saint. I used to observe St. Joseph's feast with great ceremony. I was obsessed with the details. Although my intentions were good, I can see now that I celebrated this holy day with more vanity than spirituality. Another negative trait of mine was that whenever the Lord gave me the grace to do anything well, I would do it imperfectly instead, replete with mistakes. I was highly skilled at being finicky and vain. May the Lord forgive me. I wish I could convince everyone to be devoted to this glorious saint. I have experienced the innumerable blessings that come through him from God. I have never known anyone who sincerely revered him and offered particular vows to him who did not make spiritual progress. Saint Joseph comes to the aid of those who commend themselves to him. Year after year, I have made some request of him on his feast day, and he has always granted it. If my appeal were twisted in any way, he would straighten it out for me. If I were a person with authority to do so, I would not hesitate to describe in great detail the many favors this magnificent saint has given to me and to others. But since I am constrained by my order to write about certain things at great length and to minimize others, I will have to keep this part much more brief than I would like. In other words, I'm going to have to act like someone who has no sense of discrimination and doesn't know what is good. For the love of God, I ask anyone who does not believe me to put my claims about St. Joseph to the test. Then you'll see for yourself the great goodness that comes when you offer devotion to this sublime patriarch. How could anyone think about the Queen of Angels and how she suffered for the child Jesus and not give thanks to St. Joseph for the way he helped them both? People of prayer should foster special affection for him. If you cannot find a guide to teach you contemplative practice, appeal to St. Joseph, and I assure you that this wondrous master will not lead you astray. I pray that I have not made a mistake in daring to speak of St. Joseph like this. While I have always made a great display of my devotion to him, I have never managed to successfully imitate and serve him. He cured me of my paralysis and gave me the power to stand up and walk again because of who he is. I, on the other hand, have misused this gift because of who I am. Who could have predicted that I would fall so soon after receiving so many gifts from God? After His Majesty blessed me with the very virtues that awakened my desire to serve Him. After I had found myself almost dead and in grave spiritual danger. After He had raised me up, body and soul, filling everyone with amazement that I had survived. What is this, my Lord? We live a perilous life. Here I am writing this account, and through your grace and mercy I could easily join St. Paul in saying, though I would not say it half as well, for it is not I now who live, but you, my Creator, who lives in me. It has been quite a few years now that, as far as I can understand, you have held me by the hand. In every way, little and big, I have always wanted to place your will before mine, and I have repeatedly resolved to do so. Over the years, you have tested these desires and resolutions of mine. Without even being aware of it, Your Majesty, I must have disappointed you again and again. There is nothing I would not do for love of you. In fact, you have already helped me to accomplish many things. I don't desire this world or worldly things. Nothing seems to make me happy unless it comes from you. Everything else feels like a heavy cross. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't really want what I say I want. But you know, my beloved, that I am not lying. I'm afraid, with good reason, that you may give up on me again. I am well aware how totally dependent I am on your grace to compensate for my lack of strength and virtue, and to help me not give up on you. Please, don't abandon me, my beloved. Not now, while I am thinking all these things about myself. I really don't know what makes us want to keep living when life is so uncertain. I used to think, my Lord, that it would be impossible for me to forsake you. And look how many times I have done so. I can't help but be afraid, because when you withdrew from me, even just a little, I fell flat on my face. May you be forever blessed. Even though I have neglected you, you have continuously offered me your hand and helped me back up. Often, my Lord, I refuse that hand of yours. Often, my Lord, you would call me again, and again I would refuse. This is what I would like to talk about next. Chapter 7. Prisoner of the Parlor. This is when I began to indulge in distraction after distraction, conceit on top of conceit, vice compounded by vice. I gave in to so many subtle and destructive temptations during this time, and my soul drifted so far away on the tides of vanity that I was afraid to approach God again. Prayer is an intimate friendship with the divine, and I did not feel worthy of such intimacy. My shame grew in proportion to the abundance of my errors. The more I transgressed, the less comfort and joy I was able to derive from holy things. It was clear to me, my beloved, that my joy was failing me because I was failing you. The spirit of evil, disguised as humility, led me into the most insidious deception of all: fear of prayer. I felt utterly lost. I considered myself to be the most wicked person alive. I concluded that I would be better off giving up on silent contemplation and starting to pray like everybody else. It was time to stop conversing privately with God and instead recite the vocal prayers exactly as I had learned them. After all, any outward display of silent prayer only deceived others into thinking I was good and holy, when in fact I was the opposite. My decline in virtue had nothing to do with the house where I lived. It was not their fault. I managed to manipulate everyone's good opinion of me, but I didn't mean to. I would never dream of pretending to be a good Christian. I have had many faults, but I have never, praise God, been an egomaniac or a hypocrite, as far as I know. The minute I ever felt the stirrings of arrogance inside myself, it would make me so upset that the devil would flee in consternation and I would be left better off. Maybe if God had chosen to tempt me in this area as severely as he has in others, I would have developed an overly inflated concept of my own holiness. But he has kept me from falling into this trap. May he be forever blessed. The truth is, I was much more troubled by the notion that people would be fooled by my outward appearance of goodness than that they would see me for who I knew myself to be inside. There were several reasons why nobody noticed how bad I was. What they observed was that even though I was very young and vulnerable to countless opportunities for missing the mark, I frequently removed myself from the group to pray in solitude. I read a lot and spoke exclusively about God. I liked to have pictures of Christ everywhere, and I requested a chapel of my own that I could fill with sacred objects. I refused to ever speak badly about another person. I did many other things that made me appear to be virtuous. The truth was, I was vain and worldly. I liked it when people held me in high esteem. Because of my spiritual conduct, they gave me as much freedom as they gave to the older nuns, even more. They had a great deal of confidence in me because I never took liberties. I asked permission for everything. I did not sneak out at night to talk to outsiders through crevices in the wall or to hold private discussions with other nuns. I don't think I could ever have brought myself to participate in such secret exchanges, nor did I try, because the Lord held me by the hand. I don't know why we're so shocked to hear about all the bad things that happened in spiritual communities. After all, those who are supposed to be modeling virtue to the rest of us have generally drifted so far away from the ancient wisdom that the spirits of the saints have abandoned us. May His Divine Majesty be pleased to remedy the situation as He sees fit. And so I was misled into thinking that it was harmless for me to indulge in the pseudo-spiritual conversations I enjoyed so much. It was only later that I discovered that this kind of companionship could be dangerously distracting. I didn't see why such an ordinary custom as receiving visitors at the convent and discussing so-called religious things with them should do my soul any more harm than it did other nuns who were perfectly decent people. I failed to consider that they were better people than I was, and what was safe for them was not safe for me. Still, I have no doubt that there is an element of trouble for everyone in this practice, because even if it does not cause damage, it is at least a waste of time. Once, in the early stages of my acquaintance with someone, the Lord chose to show me that these kinds of relationships were not good for me. He broke through the core of my thick blindness to teach me and show me the way. Christ Himself appeared before me, fierce and direct, to tell me exactly what it was that troubled him about these interactions. I saw him more clearly through the eyes of my soul than I ever could have with my physical eyes. This vision had such a powerful impact on me that even now, 26 years later, I can still seem to see him standing here. I was so stunned and disturbed by this experience that I never again wanted to see the person who triggered it. It did me no good to maintain the belief that it was impossible to see with any eyes other than those of the body. It was the spirit of evil that made me think such a thing. It made me wonder if my vision of Christ was a figment of my imagination, or worse, a demonic phenomenon. But I couldn't shake the conviction that this vision came from God, and I had not imagined it. Since the stern form in which Christ had appeared was not pleasing to me, however, I forced myself to lie to myself and I didn't dare discuss the matter with anyone. The spirit of evil returned full force, convincing me that there was no harm in my relationship with that person, and that far from damaging my reputation, our interactions could only enhance it. So I started having these intimate spiritual conversations with him again, and later I received other visitors in the same way. I wasted years in this insidious diversion, When I was doing it, it never seemed to me to be as bad as it really was, although I sometimes had a clear sense that I was doing something wrong. Still, no one ever distracted me quite as badly as the person I've been speaking about. I was excessively fond of him. May His Majesty be pleased to allow me to make up here for the many people I have led astray in the past. In the midst of danger, I would assure them that there was nothing wrong. Of course, I would never willingly deceive anyone. My faulty guidance was nothing but an artifact of my own blindness. Without ever dreaming that I was doing so, I was setting a terrible example and causing a great deal of harm. It is a very common temptation among beginners to try to help other people before they have learned how to take care of themselves. In those early days when I was still very sick, I fell into that trap. Luckily, the outcome was positive.